Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. I want to thank you for joining me here in the third weekend of May 2025. I don't know how it is for you, but I notice for me, it seems like time just kind of speeds up this time of year. There is more to do and feels like less time to do it. I think that's mostly a function of how much time we have daylight this time of year. So in the winter times, I'm not doing as much outside, and in the evening have a chance to catch up on maybe some of the photos that I've taken or other things that I have to do. Whereas this time of year, especially with shorebirds moving through and plants coming out, flowers blooming, all of the things I like to get out and observe, feels like the days get filled up. We have daylight until after 9, and I woke up a few days ago early in the morning, much earlier than I tend to get up, and noticed that it was already light at around 4 in the morning. So we're definitely getting into those summer-like day lengths. And it just gets filled up. Lots of birds moving through. The shorebird season was a little strange this year. We had kind of, I think, a lot of southerly winds. So I think a lot of the, especially the later arriving shorebirds, maybe just kind of moved on through without settling here too much, but have had decent numbers of western sandpipers and pretty good numbers of pectoral sandpipers here in the past week. Nice mix of other shorebirds, not necessarily big abundance, but nice to see the different species. I did have a chance to get out and check some places off the road system and saw higher numbers as I'd expect. The habitat's a little better for them in some other places along the road system. We just have the Halibut Point Rec and Stargavin and Totem Park tide flats, which are the best for shorebirds around here. And there are still some moving through. It's worth checking the beaches here even through the end of the month. You never know what might show up. And if you are getting out there and looking and have questions about what you're seeing, I'd be happy to try and help figure out what you're seeing or hearing. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page there. Although this time of year, we mostly tend to think of birds just getting started with their nesting. There are some who have been at it for quite a while already. I saw some photos somebody posted of golden crown kinglet fledglings already, and I would expect to see song sparrow or dark-eyed junco fledglings pretty much within the next week or so, certainly by the end of the month. Even though some species have been at it for a while, this still is the peak time of year between now and maybe the middle of June. For bird songs, it's a great time to get out and enjoy them or try to learn and recognize them, as the case may be. So the focus of this week's show is going to be on some of the common bird songs of the Sitka area. I'll talk a little bit at the end about Merlin and some other ways that you can help learn those. But along the way, I hope you enjoy at least the sounds of the songs and maybe learn a little bit about how to recognize them when you're out and about. And I'll go ahead and start with the song sparrow. Song sparrows are one of the most common birds that we'll see around in our yards and shrubby areas. They're also present along the harbors, even nesting in the harbor, I think. So we'll go ahead and play a song sparrow song here to begin. One of the things that you might want to notice there with the song sparrow is that it starts with a couple of repeated notes, often two or three repeated notes, and there's quite a bit of trilling in there. No real slides and sort of sliding whistles that we might hear in a fox sparrow, which I'll play in a little bit. Song sparrows, as I mentioned, they're along the harbor. They don't tend to go up very high. They're definitely close to the ground birds. When they're singing, you might see them sometimes on a utility line wire if it's not too high up, or the top of a small hemlock tree, maybe up, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 feet at the most. I think maybe even 30 feet is pushing it a little bit, but probably more like 20 feet up in the air and down. That's where the song sparrows tend to sing. So again, I'll play this one more time here, and just notice the starting notes. There's each song, there's slight variations, but it starts with a couple of repeated notes, and there's a lot of sort of that trilling kind of sound there. Thank you. So there were some other birds singing in the background that you might have noticed if you were listening closely. But the four loudest, there are four verses, I guess you could say, loudest songs were the song sparrow. Song sparrows are known to have, in some studies, they've been found to have 5 to 8 different songs that they sing, but similar in style, might have slight, you know, variations, but they'll tend to start with those repeated notes at the beginning and have trills in there along the way. The species that I was most prone to getting these song sparrows confused with, especially when I was starting out, was the fox sparrow. They look pretty similar. There are some differences, and it doesn't take too much practice to learn to tell them apart, but especially for folks that are just starting out, they're both fairly good sized, dark brown sparrows with kind of spots looking like or streaks on the chest. And so they're very quite similar in that regard. They both like to hang out on the ground. They both don't go up too high. The fox sparrow also isn't going to be found singing very high. But the main difference that, you know, really helped me was when it was actually the folks that hiked around from Seattle to, or they pack rafted, I guess. They hiked and used their pack rafts to get from Seattle to the Aleutian Islands. And they ran into a lot of fox sparrows along the way, as well as song sparrows. And they described the fox sparrow as a Star Wars bird. So if you're familiar with Star Wars and R2-D2, there's a lot of these sliding whistles, kind of sliding whistles or beeps that the song sparrow pretty much does not do, and the fox sparrow pretty much always does. So here's a fox sparrow. So you can kind of hear those whistling, sliding whistles that the fox sparrow does. And I have another recording of a different fox sparrow where there's not quite as much of the sliding whistle part of the song, but you can still hear that. This one accompanied by a neighborhood dog. So again, that was the fox sparrow, and fox sparrows, to me, they have those sliding whistles that are in there, and most similar to a song sparrow. Both of these are going to be largish brown sparrow-like birds. Well, they are sparrows, so sparrow birds, not too high up off the ground, maybe 30 feet in a tree or on a utility line, but often lower than that when they're singing. And before I move on to the next species, I'll go ahead and just play the song sparrow once, and then followed by the fox sparrow, so you can hear them each in turn. So here with the song sparrow, remember to listen for the repeated notes at the beginning of each song. There's going to tend to be quite a few trills in there, especially towards the end. And then also none of the sliding whistle parts of the song that we'll hear with the fox sparrow. So here's the song sparrow. So that was the song sparrow, and next is the fox sparrow, where you will want to listen for the sliding whistles that are in there, and they don't tend to have the repeated notes at the beginning of each song. So that was the fox sparrow, and besides the, you know, the fox sparrow and the song sparrow do sound pretty similar. It took me a while to kind of start to tease them apart. I don't think there are any other birds locally that sound too much like those. Probably the most or the next most similar bird species that sound has a song similar would be the Lincoln sparrow. The Lincoln sparrows do not tend to be as common. as either the fox sparrow or the song sparrow around here. Both the song and the fox sparrows are present in town, in neighborhoods, wherever there might be thickets. Fox sparrows I've seen up to tree line and throughout. The song sparrows seem to be really pretty concentrated near the shoreline. So if you're off the shoreline, maybe along a lake or something, in some places you might find them as well. But they don't seem to be away from the water, except for in towns. And I'm not sure why that is, but that's been my experience. Lincoln sparrows, on the other hand, they tend to be not around town as much. In Sitka proper, the place I most often hear them is around Swan Lake. So they do tend to be around Swan Lake. Also hear them over at the airport. So I don't know if they like more open habitat along so the edges of open habitat, because another place I've seen them and listened to them sing has been the edges of muskegs. So the Lincoln sparrow song is, I don't know, I would describe it kind of more burbly, kind of seems to bubble up and has this kind of bubbling quality to it. And another place, that I forgot to mention that I've also heard them pretty regularly is the Stargavin Estuary. So if you walk around the boardwalk of the estuary, you might hear these there. So here is a Lincoln's sparrow singing. Like the fox sparrow and the song sparrow that I played previously, the Lincoln sparrow will not tend to be up very high in the trees. When I've seen it singing, it's actually been even lower than the highest I've seen the song sparrow and fox sparrow. Part of that may just be the times I've happened to observe it, but most of the times it's been within 10 feet of the ground, you know, might be on a fence or a low shrub, kind of midway up a low shrub. That's where they tend to like to sing, in my experience. So not a real high up in the trees or bushes kind of singing. Very, to my ears, fairly distinctive, just this bubbly call that's coming up, and I'll play it once more. So that is the Lincoln sparrow, and keep an eye out for those, or an ear out for those, I guess I should say. Stargavin Estuary, maybe over by long-term parking at the airport here in Sitka, around Swan Lake. So, and I've also noticed them at the edges of muskegs, kind of brushy muskegs. So if you're in other areas, maybe open kind of the fringes at the edges of more open areas. I'm not quite sure where else you might find them, but those are the places that I've found them. And it's a good place to listen. Another low-hanging bird that doesn't tend to get too high and has a very distinctive song. It's a very small bird, our Pacific wren. If you have an older bird book, you might have it in there as the winter wren. Taxonomically speaking, they decided that there were apparently two species of, or maybe even three. Winter wrens used to be all around the northern hemisphere. Now they have the Pacific wren, which is in western North America. The winter wren, as it's currently called, is restricted pretty much to eastern North America. So ours is the Pacific wren, a very distinctive song. A small bird, likes to hang around in the forests and kind of, you know, you might find it scooting around under logs and that kind of thing. When it's singing, it will tend to climb up on a snag or something, but usually still only maybe 10 to 15 feet above the ground. You'll see a male up there perched singing his heart out, and it's actually kind of incredible how much song they can put out of that tiny little body. So here is a Pacific wren. That was a Pacific Wren, and it definitely packs the most number of notes, I think, into the shortest time period of any singing bird around Sitka that you might be here. Good places to hear them, pretty much any place you might walk in the forest. At Sitka National Historical Park, there's a lot of them singing there, but really any of the trails around town with forest, pretty good sized forest, you will find wrens this time of year. If you get out there, they may still actually be building nests, so it might be a good opportunity if you're inclined to kind of look for that kind of thing. You might find some wrens gathering nesting material and building their nests. They'll put them sometimes tucked away under maybe under fallen over logs or pieces of bark that have come up. I've found two or three over the years, and probably the most enjoyable was amusing to me, I guess, really, was one that built a nest in the wreath on a neighbor of mine had left up the Christmas wreath on their front door for several months, and the wren actually put a nest inside the center of that wreath. As I understand it, males will build multiple nests and the females will pick which one they prefer. And I don't believe that nest ever got used in the end, but it was fun to see it go in there. So I'll go ahead and play the Pacific Wren song once more. Just keep in mind here that just an immense number of notes, lots of very fast moving notes in these songs. And this is a very small bird that's singing. So if you ever see one of these singing, it'll be perched up usually on top of a snag, maybe 10 to 15 feet up in the air, and just belting out this song that's almost impossible to believe that it's coming out of a bird that is so tiny. Once again, that was the Pacific Wren, a pretty common bird here in the forests. Another bird in the forests that if you're walking around, say, at the park, you might hear, and this one, unlike the wren, it can be very difficult to find and see. They tend to hang out pretty high up in the canopy. They're common, but some birders call them nemesis birds. They're easy to hear, difficult to observe. And that is the Townsend's warbler. Sometimes you get lucky and they'll come down. Some of my best pictures of them came when one came down into a salmonberry thicket and was kind of foraging in my backyard there and singing as it went. They seem to not, at least not that I've noticed, pick a perch and sing there like the sparrows or the wren does, but rather just sing as they're going about their business. And so this is a pretty distinctive bird song for here. Difficult sometimes to figure out at first because they sound different in different places of their range. And so if you listen to recordings online or something, it may sound a little different than what we hear here. So I'll go ahead and play a recording of a Townsend's warbler that I recorded here in Sitka. So that was a Townsend's warbler that I recorded at Totem Park, and it is fairly typical for what I hear around here, but sometimes there are other variations, and I've heard and not got great recordings, so I won't share them here, but heard other variations when I've had opportunity to be in places elsewhere on Baranof Island, over on the east side of Baranof Island, and up on West Chichikov. In both locations, I heard variations of the Townsend Warbler song. I recognize that they were about Townsend Warblers in part by the way that the voice sounded, as opposed to the melody of the song and the notes of the song. So there is some variation there. If you travel around, Townsend Warblers occur throughout the northwest coast, southeast Alaska, down into Washington, and I think, I'm not quite sure how far north, but I suspect over to Prince William Sound and maybe even the Kenai Peninsula. So I did record another variant, I guess I should say, of Townsend's Warbler in Totem Park a while back. And so I'll play this other variant just to give you a sense of some of the variation that there might be in Townsend's Warblers. Now, any individual Townsend's Warbler seems to have a pretty similar, consistent song. I haven't noticed them really changing it up when I've been listening. I am curious about the nature of the variation in the Townsend's Warbler song. If they learn and they sing the songs similar to those next to them or in their area, and so they're singing that way, or if they learn a song at some point and that's what they stick with. I am curious, though, about the way that it seems to vary regionally, and why. And I'm not sure why a song in a given spot would tend to be consistent from year to year, especially during the migration part of the season when I would expect there to be birds moving through. So that's a question that I'm sort of curious about. I don't know if somebody will someday do some research on it, or if I'll have opportunity to get out a little bit more during the nesting season and maybe record from more locations around southeast Alaska, but something I'm curious about. Before I leave the Townsend's Warbler, I'll go ahead and play each of those clips, one after the other, just so you have a sense of some of the variation in Townsend's Warbler song. So that was the first variation of Townsend's Warbler song, and here is the second. So once again, that was the Townsend's Warbler song. Pretty distinctive, but it was one of the ones that took me the longest to figure out because it does vary from place to place, and a lot of recordings were recorded elsewhere. Also in the forest, a bird that you're more likely to hear than see has a distinctive song, I guess. Again, doesn't sound like the other ones that we're hearing about. Most often you'll hear these just making call notes, and that's Golden Crown Kinglet. And their song is, I like to describe it as, it's kind of a repeated set of notes, and then they trail downward and kind of trail off at the end. And they're, again, going to be in kind of the dense conifer, or in the canopy of the conifers, I guess I should say. Sometimes you'll see them down lower. I don't know if I've ever actually seen one singing. I certainly have heard them many times and seen them separately many times, but it is not so often that I hear them singing. And like the Townsend's Warbler, they don't seem to have a preferred perch where they'll go up and they'll sing. I'm not sure how their territoriality works, if they just go around their territory and are singing continually, or if they have, yeah, I assume that they have some territory, but I do not know how that works, and maybe that's part of the reason that they aren't picking a perch and singing from it. But here's a Golden Crown Kinglet. Thank you. So that was a Golden Crown kinglet. I think of their song as they get more and more insistent, and then they trail off at the end. So it sort of starts on this repeated note, getting more, like, it just feels more insistent to me at some level, and then trails off at the end, sometimes even then starting to sound a little more like a chickadee. But they are high-frequency callers. I mean, their song and their calls are at high frequencies, and so some folks, when you start to lose your high-frequency hearing, maybe you've used a lot of chainsaws over the years, it can be difficult to hear those, and so you may miss them entirely if you don't listen carefully. Once again, I'll play this once more. It's the Golden Crown Kinglet, and listen for the sort of repeated notes at the beginning, getting more insistent, and then dropping off, you know, both in pitch and in sort of intensity towards the end as it kind of falls off. And that's the Golden Crown Kinglet song. So once again, that was the Golden Crown Kinglet. And as I mentioned, there is a little bit there that sounds like a chickadee. And we just have chestnut-backed chickadees here as a general rule. There have been other vagrants reported over the years. But pretty much if you're hearing a chickadee here in Sitka, it's going to be a chestnut-backed chickadee. And the song, I don't know if they actually have a song much other than their calls. And so I've never really heard them. I've heard them making some other kind of chuckling noises, I guess. I wouldn't call those a song either, but their main, you know, chickadee call is sort of reminiscent of what we heard at the end of a couple of those Golden Crowns Kinglet songs. And so just for reference, I'll go ahead and play chestnut-backed chickadee calls here. Now, the chickadee is kind of well known as a sentinel bird, I guess you might say, that they are paying attention to what's going on, and they will make alarms, and other birds will cue into those. And as I understand it, the number of Ds sort of at the end, and this one didn't have any real Ds, it was just chickadee. But if they go chickadee, dee, 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 that means that it's a more intense alarm, as I understand it, and that the predator is, I guess, at some level more scary to them. So that might be something to listen for as you're out there listening to the birds. The chickadees are fairly distinctive. They hang out, especially in the wintertime, non-breeding season. You'll often see them in mixed flocks with these Golden Crown kinglets that I mentioned before. This time of year, they tend to seem to be separate. They both like similar habitats. You'll see them in the forest often, or hear them in the forest more often than see them, I suppose. They'll be up in the canopy. And they're just simple call notes, can be very difficult to distinguish. But the songs, those little chickadee calls, I guess, and again, I don't know if those are songs, strictly speaking, are fairly distinctive. They nest in little cavities, the chickadees do, and a couple times I found a nest, you listen for begging birds and then watch the chickadees coming in, and it's kind of fun. Sometimes people have even got them to nest in nest boxes that they put up. So I'll go ahead and play the chickadee song one more time. So that was the chestnut-backed chickadee, and it hangs around with Golden Crown kinglets in similar habitat and in mixed flocks, in fact, in the non-breeding season. The other bird that you'll sometimes find with those in the non-breeding season that also likes to be in the big forest is the brown creeper. Brown creepers, the chickadees and the kinglets, they'll be calling from up in the branches somewhere, often fairly high where you can't actually see them very easily. But the brown creeper will sing as it's doing its foraging. Again, none of these birds seem to like to pick a perch and sing from it, but they just sing as they're doing their thing, I guess. And the thing that the brown creepers do is they crawl up trees. They creep up trees. They're in other places called tree creepers. And they'll creep up the tree and they'll fly down to the base and they'll creep up again. They almost always go up or up the tree or out a branch. Occasionally, you might find them going in a different direction, but for the most part, they're going up. And the first few times I heard a brown creeper song, I was like, that's a strange sounding chickadee. And it took me a few times before I finally realized, oh, this is a brown creeper. So here is the brown creeper song. The brown creeper song is kind of a quick little song. I've heard it, I think in other places it might be a little longer than that. There's a little mnemonic device for helping to remember it, something like trees, trees, beautiful trees. But they don't really seem to sound like that here. That song that I just played is more typical of what I've heard here. And it's, yeah, reminds me a little bit of a strange sounding chickadee. I often hear those sort of coming from the forest somewhere, and it can be a little difficult to track down because the creepers are often moving around. I did get a chance one time to see where a brown creeper was nesting. Somebody shared with me where they had seen a brown creeper crawling, going up and building a nest under an overhanging piece of bark, that old snag, and part of the bark had come up a little bit, and they're actually building their nest in underneath that, which is kind of interesting to see. So before I move on, I will play the brown creeper song just one more time. So that again was the brown creeper, a bird that's, I would say, uncommon in our forests around here. It's not super difficult to find, but you don't find them all the time. So before I leave the birds of the forest, kind of the coniferous forest, if you're walking around, maybe like the loops at Totem Park or up Indian River Trail, good places to hear these birds, maybe Mosquito Cove. There's one other species that I'd like to play. The varied thrush is in there. I don't happen to have a recording of a varied thrush to share, but they're very common, well-known. I guess a lot of people recognize them as the telephone bird, just a solid, buzzy kind of whistle. Single note, extends for a second or two. So that's pretty distinctive. If you've been hearing that and you hadn't heard what it was before, so that's a varied thrush. I might take a look online and look for a recording of that. But the one I wanted to play a recording of today is the Pacific Slope Flycatcher. That bird, also a pretty distinctive call. I've heard it described as the come here bird because it's kind of got this whistle like you might hear from somebody trying to get your attention. And that's part of its repertoire. There's also another set of kind of, I guess, maybe three notes that are repeated. Well, I shouldn't say three notes, a three-note phrase, essentially. It's that's repeated. And I'll play both the come here whistle and or get your attention whistle and the three-note phrase here in a moment. The interesting thing about flycatchers in part is that they seem to have their song hardwired in. Many songbirds learn their songs when they are young. The Pacific Slope Flycatcher, among and some other flycatchers as well, have a very consistent song as it's genetically programmed into them. So here is the, shall we say, the get your attention whistle of the Pacific Slope Flycatcher, which you might hear in a forested area. So sometimes that sort of get your attention whistle, a sounding call, was followed by a little, almost like a squeak of a chip note, a call note. And the other, I guess, main song of the Pacific Slope Flycatcher, that's part of that song as well. So here's a clip of the Pacific Slope Flycatcher and the other part of its song. So once again, that was the Pacific Slope Flycatcher, a bird you're mostly going to hear in the forest, probably mostly low elevation forests, coniferous forests. You might as long as you're near them, you could hear them coming from there. But it seems like that's mostly where they hang out. I want to go ahead and shift from birds in that habitat to birds that you might hear from that habitat, but are mostly going to hang out in along the margins of that, maybe where there's mixed forest with alders mixed in along shorelines or along rivers, or near thickets, maybe in some mixed open areas where perhaps there's old deadfalls and now stem and berry thickets have moved in. So there's some other birds that are pretty commonly heard around here. Ruby-crowned kinglet is the one I'm going to start with. It's actually one of our earliest migrants, songbird migrants. They show up often by the end of March, first week of April for sure. They're typically here often in the alders, red alders especially, you'll see them. They'll call, once again, not necessarily from a single perch, but they'll be calling as they're moving through foraging. They're a small bird as well. And they have a pretty distinctive song. I'll go ahead and play it for you now, the Ruby-crowned kinglet. So that was a ruby-crowned kinglet in the foreground there. There were some other birds kind of singing in the background you might have noticed. The ruby-crowned kinglet is fairly consistent. There is some variation that I've noticed. They most often will start with a kind of a repeated note. Even if they don't do it every time through, you will hear them sing that usually at some point. If you listen for more than just a few seconds. So it's a repeated note, and then there's this kind of rhythm that often shows up that is reminiscent a little bit of the Lone Ranger. So that's another thing that helped me when I was first starting to learn these bird songs. Somebody pointed that out to me and made it a little easier for me to remember how that was, what those were. So I do have some other recordings here of a ruby-crowned kinglet I will play that give you a little more sense of the variation that you might hear in a ruby-crowned kinglet song. That was another version of a ruby-crowned kinglet. And one of the things I've noticed as over the years as I have become more proficient at identifying birds by their songs is that now I am interested in the variation that occurs in the song. So the ruby-crowned kinglet is present throughout the road system, and I've noticed some variations. I do not know if individuals tend to sing the same song or if the variations are, you know, an individual sing a number of different variations, or if there's a spatial component to it. That is, do the birds out at Stargaven tend to sing similarly, and the birds at Totem Park sing similarly, but they don't necessarily sing as similarly to each other between those places. So that's some of the things that I'm curious about, and, you know, really, I guess all that takes is going out and recording and paying some attention. But if anybody else is interested in those kind of questions, I'd encourage you. It's easy enough to record even with a smartphone, but you can also get some pretty inexpensive digital recorders to record bird songs. So I'll go ahead and finish up the ruby-crowned kinglets here with one more variation on the ruby-crowned kinglet. Once again, that was a Ruby Crown Kinglet, that one recorded at Totem Park in the springtime. So you might have heard some of the ravens that are pretty common down there calling in the background. Another bird of the sort of fringe areas, the doesn't call as high necessarily. It tends to be a little lower in my experience, but really likes salmonberry thickets, also in alders, red alder stands, and so forth, is the orange-crowned warbler. Orange-crowned warblers show up usually the end of April, 1st of May, kind of that neighborhood within there, they start to show up. And their song is pretty distinctive. I've heard it described, one of my past guests, Lucy Phillips, described it as running your fingers along a comb. It's kind of got that quality of sound to it. So here is the orange-crowned warbler. The orange-crowned warbler there, it has a repeated note, kind of a trill, actually maybe a slow trill that tends to decrease or increase in tone at the end. So the pitch tends to change and the speed of the trill seems to change typically towards the end. It doesn't always work that way, but most often it does. The orange-crowned warblers are going to be hanging around in shrubs, and you can often see them if you try and follow them or try and find the sound, I guess, where the sound is coming from. They will be moving around through the thickets as they're calling. Most often, that's how I've noticed them calling. They don't seem to hold a single perch where they're going to be singing repeatedly. Although I have noticed that happen before. I have seen one singing from a perch, often very low to the ground. The one that I noticed and watched for a few minutes singing from the same perch was only about 3 feet off the ground out at the end of Totem Park there, kind of along the margin of the beach. So here is, once again, the orange-crowned warbler song. Now, when the orange-crowned warbler sings like in that recording where there's a change in pitch and a change in tempo of the trill, it's relatively easy to distinguish from other birds around here. But sometimes they don't do that. Sometimes the pitch will remain the same and maybe the trill will remain at a constant rate. And in those cases, it can be very difficult to tell apart orange-crowned warbler from a junco. Dark-eyed juncos are quite common here. They are one of the most abundant birds in the winter. If you keep a bird feeder, you'll see lots of dark-eyed juncos. Usually around sometime in March and April, they start to disperse. Depends a little bit on the weather that year, but the flocks will start to diminish in size around the neighborhoods. And I don't know where they all go. Some of them may go further away, but it seems like at least some of them are probably nesting. They move uphill, basically. They move up into the valleys. They like to nest along the edges of places, the edges of forest clearings, the edges of muskegs, up all the way up to tree line you can find them. And they also do nest in neighborhoods, so you'll see some, but not nearly as many throughout the summer. Juncos often do like to perch when they sing. I don't remember actually seeing them move around and singing. They usually are singing from a single perch. In my experience, most often from the top of a small tree, not super high up in the air, you know, maybe in that 10 to 20 foot range, maybe a little higher than that. They'll be up in this tree and they'll just have this trill that's repeated again and again. And the trill of a junco sounds a little different than the orange-crowned warbler, but the distinctiveness of the tone, it can be difficult to hear when you're just starting out. So just listen for the constant repeated trill without a change, typically without a change in speed or in pitch. So here is a dark-eyed junco singing. Now, to my ears, that Junko song sounds slightly more melodic. I guess the tone of the voice is richer and fuller than that of the Orange Crown Warbler. So that's one of the things that I listen for. But it took me quite a while before I could start to hear that consistently. And even now, there are times when I'm not sure whether I'm hearing a dark-eyed Junko or whether I'm hearing Orange Crown Warbler. So just to give you a sense of how challenging it can be to tell them apart, I will go ahead and play a Orange-crowned warbler call where the warbler did not change pitch and did not change the speed of its trill. And the only reason I really was positive what it was is because I was able to watch it while I recorded. So that was the Orange Crown Warbler, and here again is the Dark-Eyed Junko. One thing that might stand out between those two recordings is the speed of the trill. It was much quicker for the Orange Crown Warbler. Unfortunately, that isn't consistent. There are Orange Crown Warblers that trill slower, and there are Junkos that trill faster at times. Sometimes even the same Junko, I have noticed that every once in a while, a Junko will switch between a slow trill and a fast trill. So in the end, with Orange Crown Warblers and Dark-Eyed Junkos, sometimes you just need to see the bird to be sure. Personally, I find it kind of fun to have these mysteries out there where I don't always know what it is that I'm hearing, and I'm just enjoying it. It's always a challenge to keep learning more. So I would encourage you to treat it that way as well. It's not the end of the world if you can't identify every bird out there, but it's fun to listen. An excuse, I guess, really, to listen and pay more attention to what's out there. There is one other bird that sometimes people mistake for Orange-Crowned Warbler or a Dark-Eyed Junko. It has a trill, sort of a repeated note, but much slower than either the Junko or the Orange-Crowned Warbler tends to be, and that's the Wilson's Warbler. Wilson's Warblers tend to be in, I guess where I've mostly noticed them is in salmonberry thickets, sometimes in relatively small salmonberry thickets in the forest. So in an area that might be considered mostly just forest, but there's a small clearing with salmonberries, they'll be in there sometimes. They are also along the estuary at Stargavin or out Nelson Logging Road. You'll hear them fairly often out there. And they're pretty distinctive. If you see them, they're a bright yellow bird, the male with this black cap, and the female's a slightly less bright yellow, but still a bright yellow bird. Very distinctive looking bird. And the song is this, I guess maybe a slow trill, repeated note. And the way it sounds to me is that it gets more insistent. So you might actually also, if you remember the Golden Crown Kinglet, kind of mistake it for that as well, but the kinglet drops off at the end, whereas this Wilson's Warbler just gets more insistent and then stops. So here's a Wilson's Warbler singing. So that was a Wilson's Warbler. The trill was more, seemed like less of a trill, I guess, to me, and more of a repeated notes that are getting more and more insistent as it goes towards the end. That's the way that it kind of sounds to me. These are going to be hanging out along thickets primarily. Another good place to see them is if you were to walk out the road past Herring Cove. All those salmonberry thickets along the side of the road there, it's not unusual to hear and sometimes even be able to get a good look at those. So I'll go ahead and play one more recording, this one from Thimbleberry Lake, just a couple of songs here, and you might hear a second Wilson's Warbler in the background. These two were singing back and forth. Once again, that was the Wilson's Warbler singing, that one recorded at Thimbleberry Lake. There are two other birds that I want to make sure to cover before the show ends here in a little bit, and that is the thrushes, the hermit thrush and the Swainson's thrush. their songs are somewhat similar in quality. There are some distinctive differences that make them not too difficult to tell apart with a little bit of practice. The Hermit Thrush shows up earlier in the season. Usually the Hermit Thrushes are here around the first week of May, and the Swainson's Thrushes don't usually show up until around the third week of May. And so I'll go ahead and play a recording here of a Hermit Thrush to start with. That was a Hermit Thrush, and you might have noticed a couple of calls of the Varied Thrush there. A little bit in the background, there were actually also two Hermit Thrushes singing back and forth, but the one louder one was obviously closer to where I was recording from. And the thing about the Hermit Thrush, you know, the song is just amazing. They're start usually with this fairly solid note, and maybe a little bit slurred, kind of as a little bit of a sliding slur in that first note. And then they have this very intricate sort of song. I don't really know how to describe it, but I think they're using, birds often have two vocal cords that they can use sort of independently, so they can sing two notes at once in many cases. And that's a little bit of what it sounds like that Hermit Thrush is doing. So the Hermit Thrush will go up and down. There doesn't seem to be a consistent pattern of a solid note starting and then going up from there. And so that's one of the things that sets it apart from the Swainson's Thrush. The Swainson's Thrush will start at a note, and it'll kind of repeat that note and then tend to go up from there. The Hermit Thrush usually just has one solid note and then sings its little tune melody from there. So here again is the Hermit Thrush. That was a Hermit Thrush. And now I'll go ahead and play a short clip of Swainson's Thrush singing. Quality is quite similar, but the Swainson's Thrush tends to repeat a note, not always, but tends to repeat a note at the beginning of each phrase, and then really just spirals upward. That's kind of the way that it, the quality sense that it gives is this spiraling upward. So that was a Swainson's Thrush. Usually you'll start hearing them sing around the last of May. Hermit Thrushes will often be singing by the first or second week of May. So they're both good birds to listen for. They have similar sounding voices, but their song is different once you get the hang of listening to the Swainson's Thrush, that sort of repeated note and the upward spiral that it tends to do. Whereas the Hermit Thrush tends to have the solid first note, not usually repeated, and then doesn't really spiral upward. It just has this very intricate sort of sounding song that comes after that first note. So before I wind up here, I want to go ahead and I'll play each of those for you again. First, here is the Hermit Thrush. That was the Hermit Thrush, and now once again, the Swainson's Thrush. That once again was the Swainson's Thrush. And we're running out of time here for today's show, and I didn't quite get to all the birds that you might hear singing. There are definitely some other migrant species that move through, and breeding species as well. One in particular that I didn't mention today was the American Robin. That's a fairly well-known song, I think, the Cheery Up, Cheerio song, and I only mentioned but didn't play any of the varied thrush recordings, another commonly recognized song around Sitka. So I hope you have a chance to get out and enjoy the bird songs, even if you can't identify what species they are. And maybe if you listen to all of today's show, you'll pick up a few that you start to recognize and be able to learn. And in my experience, that's the way you start. You start to pick out one or two at a time and kind of get those. And each year, maybe you develop a little more memory, or maybe you start over from scratch from year to year. I know a lot of folks each year they know they've heard those before, but they can't quite remember what it is. So it's all fun. Good excuses to get out and enjoy yourself and just pay attention to the world around you. And we are currently in the best time of year to enjoy the bird songs, whether you're out there just for pleasure and enjoyment of the beauty of the songs, or whether you're trying to learn to recognize their voices and the songs that they're singing. It is a good time to get out. I'd recommend even just starting in your yard, pretty much anywhere in Sitka or wherever you happen to live. If you step out in the morning, there's a good chance you can hear a bird singing this time of year. Get to know the neighbors, so to speak, and you know, become familiar with them. Perhaps you can get a look at them and record if you can, if you want. There are cell phones. Many of us, most of us probably at this point, have smartphones which are capable of recording. And that's good enough. You can post on iNaturalist just the sounds, or you can send somebody more knowledgeable. I'd be happy to take a listen if you live in Southeast Alaska especially. You can send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com. And I'd love to listen to whatever songs you get recorded and, you know, help try to identify them if I can. There are also technological tools that are available now and have rapidly improved in their ability to identify sounds. I guess they're using AI kind of learning techniques to identify and classify these songs that the birds are making. And Merlin is kind of the premier app for that, at least in North America. You can download that to your smartphone and just play or hit the record, use the app in the field. It'll be recording. You can save the recording or delete it. But as the birds are calling, it'll pull up a little bar that tells the name of the bird and indicates, highlights it when it's hearing that bird. So that can be a good way to learn what birds are there. It's also easy to just kind of look at it and not really think about it. I was using it the other day and recognized I started to get a little bit of a tunnel vision focused in on the screen of my phone. But if you use that as a tool, maybe listen to the bird and try and remember what it is and then play Merlin and see what it says. It's not infallible. It does make some mistakes, but it has improved a lot in the years since it was first released and seems to be pretty reliable for most of the birds that occur here. It's always great to get out with other people if that's something that's available to you, or to get on the internet. There is a Facebook group for Sitka Birds. There's also an email list. You can search Sitka Birds on Facebook or go to sitkanature.org. And scroll down there, and there's a link to join the Sitka Birds email group. Of course, there are also regional and national and international groups focused on birds and sometimes even subsets of birds. So whatever you choose to do, I'd encourage you to get out there and enjoy the birds, especially in this spring time of year. As always, I want to thank you for joining me here on the Sitka Nature Show this week. I'd love to hear what you're seeing out there. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com. Or get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page there. Until next time, this has been Matt on the Sitka Nature Show, KCAW, Sitka.